On April 22nd, you heard four topic areas that were part of this project, having to do with both schools and parks. There were four topic areas. The number 1, 2, and 4 relate to schools, and those are before you again today. And I want to mention that all of the school-related topic zoning amendments that we're talking about today affect all of our school districts, the 6 school districts in Portland, and they also affect private schools as well. Back on April 22nd, 2010, you heard testimony on these amendments, and you began deliberations, but the council meeting ran out of time, and then you postponed to the following week. What happened then at the following meeting on April 28th, 2010, was that you had narrowed the focus of your discussions to the third topic, which was recreational fields, and you voted to adopt a set of recommendations, to adopt a set of amendments related to recreational fields on that date, and those are now in effect. That then left the school-related amendments to be discussed at a future date, and here we are today. There were two questions that were common to all four of the topics discussed in this project, and those two questions are, first, what are the appropriate thresholds to trigger a conditional use review? And secondly, if a conditional use review is appropriate, what type of review should it be, a type 2 or type 3? And those two, as you know, differ in terms of the cost, the time, and the appeal body. So that's the difference between a 2 and a 3. So those questions are common to all three school-related amendments we'll be talking about today. Now, again, what I'm going to be presenting is the Planning Commission's recommendation back from March of 2010. And the first topic is enrollment fluctuations. The question before you is, what are the appropriate thresholds to trigger conditional use requirements when schools have enrollment changes, fluctuations in enrollment that are common to every school? The Planning Commission's recommendation would allow those fluctuations in enrollment and fluctuations in staffing without a conditional use. Instead of counting enrollment, which is very difficult because almost literally enrollment can change day to day for any given school. So rather than have a very difficult to implement requirement, what the Planning Commission recommended instead is that we use the increase in square footage as essentially the proxy for expansion. If a school is expanding square footage, that's an indication of growth. And if that growth in square footage is over a threshold of 1,500 square feet, then we determine that would be the trigger for a conditional use review rather than a counting of heads. And that seems to be a much more workable and sort of common sense trigger for a conditional use. And I want to note that 1,500 square feet is important because, first of all, it's already in the code for other things. But more importantly, for some of the things we've heard in testimony, concerns about portables, for example, they tend to be over that threshold, approximately 1,700 square feet. So what this means is with this adoption of this amendment, a conditional use would still be triggered if a portable were added to a school. The other thing about this particular topic is that we wanted to reflect or acknowledge the fact that there are other kinds of regulations that really control the size and capacity of a school. So there are a number of fire code and other health and safety issues that come into play to look at whether a school campus can accommodate particular enrollment. So we felt like those other requirements were in place and were enough of a safeguard to make sure a capacity was commensurate with the size of the school. The next topic area is the subject that has generated the most discussion through this whole process, and that's the change of grade levels. The question before us was, what are the appropriate thresholds to trigger conditional use requirements when a school has a shift in grade levels? At the April hearing, you heard testimony about zoning code compliance cases. This is a lot of testimony. I imagine we might hear more of that today. There were a number of compliance cases filed against Portland Public Schools, not our other school districts, but Portland Public Schools, because they did a number of grade reconfigurations back in 2008, where they converted either an elementary school to a K-8 or some middle schools, adding some lower grades, and that generated a lot of discussion. Those enforcement cases were put on hold at the time because there were some ambiguities in our zoning code that had different interpretations and were difficult to interpret based on the confusion. So it was that set of enforcement complaints that in part prompted this project in the first place. I do want to note that once you take action today on any amendments, those old enforcement cases that have been on hold will be reviewed against the new code that you adopt. So that's something to keep note of.
Can I just interrupt there? Do we know that that's going to be acceptable to the state and with the no changing the goalpost rule? Can we change the rules and then review them with the new rules?
I think it is because the code was unclear, the interpretation was up in the air. So that it's I think that what we would say is that we're clarifying something that was ambiguously interpreted. And therefore, it's not a new rule. It's just clarifying something that was ambiguous before. One of the things that the Planning Commission's recommendation did in this area is to clarify the designations. Previously, our zoning code referred to grade school types like elementary school, middle school, used those terms, which did not comport with the state definition. State calls an elementary school K through 8. Our zoning code had a different definition, so we would be bringing our definitions in play. But what we would do, instead of referring to elementary or middle school or high school, we would talk about the grade levels themselves. So the Planning Commission's recommendation is tied to the actual grades, so K through 5, 6 through 8, 9 through 12, rather than use those terms. The most significant change from our existing code to what the Planning Commission recommends is that under their recommendation, adding lower grades, meaning any grades K through 5, to a school that contains grades 6 through 8 or above would trigger a Type 3 conditional use review. And that was the real change from what the code says today, other than some other clarifications. So that was a particular recommendation that was backed by testimony you heard in April from three of our planning commissioners because of their concern about the safety impacts of mixing younger students with older students. So in a situation where you have what had formerly been called a middle school, you're suddenly adding lower grades. The Planning Commission had a lot of concerns about those potential safety impacts when you're mixing the kids of those ages. So that was the significant part of their recommendation. The what we had called topic number 4, but the third of our school-related amendments, has to do with the conditional use status for vacant school properties. The question is, what's the appropriate period of time that must lapse before a vacant school property would lose its conditional use status? This is because most schools are in a residential zone. They have a conditional use status to allow them to function as schools. If the school were to vacate and the property were vacant, currently our code says after 3 years, that status as a school would go away and a new school coming into that facility would have to go through a new process. What the Planning Commission recommended was to extend that to 5 years, recognizing there's some needs for some flexibility. If a school were to need major repairs after a fire, for example, or if there were other significant changes, they might need more than that three-year period to get the school back up and running, and they wanted the flexibility. And we agreed, the Planning Commission agreed, that having more flexibility made sense. And the Planning Commission also recommended that a Type 2 review would be required to reestablish after that five-year period rather than a Type 3. But a Type 3 would be required if that period were extended after 10 years. Okay. And my recollection is this is not an amendment that generated any discussion or opposition. Because it's been a while since April 22nd of 2010, I just wanted to recap sort of the major issues that we heard through both written and oral testimony. And again, you may hear some or all of these issues come up again today. A number of concerns expressed about transportation safety when you mix the grades. And again, this was the primary point that the planning commissioners made, but some other testifiers made this point as well. There was a lot of testimony about the need for expanded coordination between our school districts and the city of Portland. There was testimony about the impact on communities about school closures and boundary changes, and I think that's, again, another issue you might hear about today. A number of concerns expressed through testimony about code enforcement, public's role in conditional use reviews, and also just the differences in terms of public involvement with a Type 2 versus a Type 3. And then finally, there was some testimony about safe routes to schools and how effective that program is in looking at addressing concerns about traffic safety. So the Planning Commission's recommendation to you was to do two things. One is to adopt the Schools and Parks Conditional Use Code Refinement, and that's the proposal that was originally contained in this blue document dated March 18th, 2010. I also provided to you a memo dated February 9th of this year with three very minor technical amendments. They are not substantive in any way, but they just were sort of cleanup issues. So Planning Commission's recommendation plus those amendments. But I also want to make note of some other things that the Planning Commission wanted you to direct staff to follow up on. And this, some of these issues have to do with some of the other testimony that was not directly addressed in this code amendment process, but really are some bigger policy issues. And so Planning Commission is asking you, Council, to direct us to develop agreements and policies that would do things like recognize the school districts and the city's mutual interest in collaborating on issues having to do with the role of schools as hubs of community and the role of, or the interplay between our livability and schools. The Planning Commission wants you to direct us to ensure some consistency with city goals and policies for transportation connections, reduce dependence on auto travel, equity, and overall livability. Again, they said there needs to be more collaboration, which I think we are doing a much better job these days in talking with our school districts about how our mutual policy decisions affect each other. So we'd like to continue that work through intergovernmental agreements and policy through the Portland Plan and our comprehensive plan update. The Planning Commission also wanted to encourage good neighbor agreements and other kinds of non-regulatory tools to provide for those better relationships between schools, parks, and the public. And finally, they wanted us to encourage or wanted you to encourage opportunities for community-wide discussion regarding some of the non-educational impacts of school facilities and any changes to facilities. So we would look for some direction in that as well.
Did the Planning Commission review the current city schools policy that's in the comprehensive plan?
That came up in testimony, and I have talked about that as having some very good policy language that we would like to carry forward. We're taking parts of that through the Portland plan and more specifically through the comprehensive plan update. So, yes, we did talk about that document. And
they didn't review it in detail and say which parts of it they wanted more study on?
No, and not to my knowledge.
Can you tell us what the work is being done on the schools issues in the Portland plan?
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of work we've been working with a technical advisory group that involves the superintendents and staff from all of our school districts. We have not worked with Riverdale, but with our other school districts, to look at, in part, looking at the Cradle to Career initiative and how that requires some alignment of policy decisions and some increased collaboration. And we've also started talking about having some agreements and starting to outline what those agreements between Portland and our school districts might say in terms of how and when we'd collaborate or talk about particular issues and how we could build some more structural changes to the way we collaborate on particular issues. So those conversations are ongoing. I think that the policies in the Portland plan are likely to say this is where we want to be going, and then the details will be worked out through subsequent agreements.
So what kind of involvement from neighbors and parents has there been in that work so far?
We have had discussions through workshops and other public events with neighbors. I believe that I'd have to look at the composition of the work group, but I think that there have been some conversations with some parent organizations, Portland Parents for, I'm forgetting the name, Public Schools.
Committed Parents for Public Schools.
Yeah, it's escaping, but yeah. And those would continue, those kinds of. Right now, it's still at kind of a broad policy level, but we definitely want to be involving those kinds of organizations in those discussions as we move into a greater level of detail. In fact, we're just at that point now with the Portland plan where we're looking at going from the broader strategy to some specific actions, and that's where we really need to identify community partners as well as agency partners to say, how do we make this real instead of just being policy language at a broad scale?
Right, and I hope you'll involve the neighborhood associations and other community groups as well as the parent-teacher groups.
Mm-hmm.
When we were doing the Southwest Community Plan, it was important to communities that had a school in their community,
right,
that was the glue that stuck it together.
Yeah. In fact, I was at an education summit a couple of weeks ago, and one of the summit participants, Will Fuller from Sweeney, was noting that the neighborhood associations need to have a stronger role in the school discussions, and he noted that Sweeney was the only coalition that has an education committee, and I tried to raise some awareness that that's a sort of a missing partner in the larger larger discussions about education. So I thought that was a very important point to make.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Deborah. The council's had distributed to them from Mayor Adams' office a memo dated February 9th, 2011. Attached thereto are a series of amendments to the Planning Commission's proposal. I'd like to move the amendments and get them before council so we can have a presentation. So I'd so move.
I'll second them for discussion.
The amendments that are before council, rather than regulating the three school levels and requiring a Type 3 conditional use review when adding lower grades to a middle school, as the Planning Commission would do, this amendment, on the other hand, would regulate just two school levels, K through 8 and 9 through 12. The amendment would put our city code in alignment with the state definitions of grade levels. The mayor's alternative proposal also addresses the Planning Commission's concern regarding the transportation needs of lower grade students through a robustly funded and more comprehensive Safe Routes to School program in partnership with Portland Public Schools. There's a draft memorandum of agreement in your packet, and that will formally be on the agenda next week alongside the second reading of the code and hopefully with the amendment as part of that. Specific components of the memorandum of agreement in your packet includes an intergovernmental agreement that has some of the following points. Using the Safe Routes to School program, which has a proven track record in getting needed improvements built, as the primary vehicle for prioritizing and building transportation improvements. Second, creating a prioritized master list that includes all Portland Public Schools and those that participate in Safe Routes to Schools and those that do not yet participate would be included. The process for creating the list will include clear evaluation criteria and a public involvement element. Third, presenting the new master project list prioritizing process to the Planning and Sustainability Commission for their approval. And finally, the district has agreed to commit $5 million from the upcoming bond, assuming that it passes, towards the program outlined in the MOU over the next 6 years. We've got public testimony, unless council has any questions at this point.
Well, I have a question about the components of the mayor's proposal. I don't know if you or staff know the answer to them, but...
We will get somebody up here from the staff very quickly.
So what is this? Go ahead and introduce yourself.
Good afternoon. Commissioners, Kurt Kruger with the City of Portland Transportation Bureau.
So what's the status of the Safe Routes to Schools for the 90-odd elementary schools that we have? And the
good question. I'm going to call upon Dan Bauer with our Safe Routes to School program to answer that question.
How many schools do we have in Portland Public Schools?
Dan Bauer, Transportation. We're in Safe Routes to Schools and PPS. We have 72 Safe Routes to School programs.
How many schools do we have in Portland Public Schools?
Oh, K through 8 is
David White.
85. That includes high schools.
Okay. So we don't have the that they're not all done. What's the total amount of funding that's needed to provide improvements in those?
For the physical improvements?
Yeah.
I can't say that we can put a number to that. It would be in the tens of millions.
And
right now, the Safe Routes to School program is only at K through 5 or K through 8 schools. We haven't done any assessments around high schools at this point. And we have engineering reports for 27 schools, 22 within the PPS boundaries. At those 22 schools, we've identified all the needs around them.
Do we know how much that number is?
I'm not going to put a number on it right now.
Do you know how many? You're a wise man. And that's why I appreciate you. that's careful. Do you know how much we've spent on physical improvements in the Safe Routes to School program?
Since the program launched 4 or 5 years ago, we've spent close to $2 million on physical improvements. Most of that's coming through federal funds flowing through the state for Safe Routes to School projects specifically.
Right.
Excuse me.
Thank you. That's very helpful. It happens to me too. And do we know what happens to the memorandum of understanding if the bond measure doesn't pass?
So I think we'd be giving up the conditional use review for the grade level changes, and that would be the biggest significant change over what we have today. Portables and other typical conditional uses around schools would still be in effect.
But we would still lose the conditional use even though we couldn't provide the improvements. And I was wondering from the city attorney, do we know if this would be in that using this capital improvements list as a basis for approving proposed conditional uses as they currently are, is that does that meet state land use requirements?
I believe it would, in the sense that state land use requirements don't specify what we need to look to determine what kind of transportation improvements need to be made. If the improvements are identified in our TSP, in our transportation element, if our transportation staff recommends certain improvements, I believe we would be consistent with state law.
Thank you. I think those are my transportation questions. Thank you.
So, Susan, can you please call the list?
Yes, we have three testifiers, David Wind, Mark Bartlett, and Marianne Schwab.
Good afternoon. Mr. Wind, welcome to the Portland Public Schools.
Good afternoon, commissioners. I'll wait for these folks to get seated before
okay.
I start.
Would you like to go first or last?
You signed up first.
I signed up first, so I think they'd like me to go first. So I'm sure if there are questions that you have, you will address those to us as you see fit.
Correct.
So good afternoon, Commissioner Leonard, Commissioner Fritz, Commissioner Saltzman. My name is David Wind. I'm a member of the Portland Public Schools Board of Education and chair of the board's Finance, Audit, and Operations Committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today on the schools and parks zoning code refinement package. I'm here this afternoon to provide comments on behalf of the school district regarding the proposed zoning code changes and the memorandum of understanding related to transportation improvements. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank the city's Planning and Sustainability Commission and their staff for their effort throughout this process to clarify and update a number of confusing and ambiguous issues in the city zoning code related to the regulation of public schools. We certainly appreciate their work in this regard. I've appeared before you a number of times in the past 7.5 years, and there has been a continuing theme underlining my appearances, which I think it's important to acknowledge, and that is the growing partnership between the city and the school district, which I believe is a good thing for our city and for our school children, and the work that is coming before you today is another example of that collaboration and partnership. Regarding the recommendations before you today, Portland Public Schools supports the mayor's alternative proposal to change the zoning code regulatory structure for schools and the memorandum of understanding developed between PPS and the city to establish a partnership to assess, prioritize, and fund transportation safety projects on a district-wide basis. While we support the Planning Commission's recommendations regarding enrollment fluctuations and conditional use status of vacant school property, we cannot support the Planning Commission's recommendations for changes in grade levels for reasons our Superintendent and Chief Operating Officer provided you with last April. The Mayor's proposed alternative provides greater flexibility needed by public schools to deliver robust educational programming and is mindful of the impact schools can have on neighboring properties. The memorandum of understanding contained in the Mayor's proposal to address transportation improvements around district schools was developed through a collaborative and cooperative process between district and city staff over the last few months. I think it's clear from the level of detail in the MOU that this has been a deep and substantial work. I'm used to MOUs that are like 1.5 pages long. This is almost 7 pages long and fairly detailed. The proposed MOU builds on the partnership the district and the city currently enjoy in the form of the Safe Routes to School program, and provides a great example of how the district and the city can address an issue of common interest beyond using just a regulatory approach. I commend the mayor's office for the forethought and flexibility in identifying an alternative approach to funding transportation safety projects at district schools. I think it's this kind of collaboration and cooperation that strengthens our partnership in delivering quality educational programs to the students of Portland Public Schools. The Portland School Board is scheduled to take up the MOU at its meeting on February 28th, next Monday, and will consider a resolution recommending approval of that MOU from the Board's Finance Committee. So thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I'm certainly happy to answer any questions you might have, and there are district staff here who can cover for me when I don't know what I'm talking about.
Thank you, first of all, for your service on the school board and for being here today. I appreciate you taking the time.
You're welcome.
We've just heard that we need tens of millions of dollars of improvements around the schools, mm-hmm. just in Portland Public Schools, never mind in the East County or mm-hmm. the East Portland jurisdictions. Is there anything in the memorandum of understanding which says that you will let the city know when you're thinking of adding more students to a particular building so that we can take what we do some planning ahead of time to take whatever scarce resources we are to provide the sidewalks at that school rather than one of the other 85?
It's my understanding that that is the purpose of the prioritization that's envisioned in the memorandum of understanding, is that we can be try and be as clear as possible about where the highest level of need is.
There's a lot of schools with a lot of need in terms of transportation. We know that mm-hmm. from the level of infrastructure or lack thereof in the neighborhoods. So how is it proposed to go about deciding if we have $5 million over 6 years, that's one or two schools, how would we decide which school got those?
I'm going to look for help.
Maybe they can come up and testify afterwards. That's if you don't know the answer.
No, I don't know the answer, but I think district staff can or city staff can clarify that. I mean, we are faced, the scarcity of resources and not having enough to do everything we need to do is something that we're all facing. I mean, that we're proposing a capital bond, which we hope will provide the funding for this. That will raise only a fraction of what we know we need to do in all of the schools in Portland. So we're used to having to prioritize where we think the greatest need is. And I think that's the same kind of process in terms of dialogue between city staff and district staff to figure out how we're going to allocate the scarce resource that this would provide.
How does that tie in with your decisions about grade level?
I don't know that it does necessarily. I mean, I think what this is talking, what this is focused on is the fact that it's there's an underlying belief that when a school serves kids in grades K through 8, as opposed to high school, that whether it's K-5 or 6-8 or K-8, that the number of students is more important than the specific configuration of those grades. And it changes when you get to high school because of the relative transportation patterns that you're likely to see with high school kids as opposed to kids in elementary or middle school.
Thank you.
Further questions? In the draft memorandum of agreement, it talks about the district funding of the projects contingent on project eligibility for capitalization. Is there any question that these projects would be eligible for the bond measure? I guess
I don't think there's any question. I think the expectation is that any of the projects contemplated by this memorandum of understanding would be eligible for capitalization, but because it's a capital bond that is providing the funding for us, it has to be explicit that those have to be projects that are capitalizable and not capitalizable, because the bond proceeds are specific about that. You can't use bond proceeds for routine maintenance. You have to use it for capitalizable projects. So as a matter of form, we have to say that anything that we do with those proceeds would have to be capitalizable.
Okay. Mark?
Hi, Mark Bartlett, Mount Tabor Neighborhood. I don't know if you've read my... I don't know if you've read my submitted testimony, but I wanted to remind you that 2 years ago, Eric Einstrom wrote to Gail Kelly that they had no problem deciding that these were, in fact, violations. So there's really no question that they were. And if they could determine them, they must have had some standard by which they did so. So the point I make there is, how do we go back and retroactively create a process where the impacted neighborhoods or community members or organizations or businesses have any input to participate in that change process, since they just failed to file applications knowing that the neighborhoods would be bypassed? I mean, the Planning Commission was pretty clear after we presented our information. This is part of the reason why some of these changes were done without the notification process. And that's why they made the recommendation for type threes. I mean, I've asked planning and they said they don't have an answer to that, except that maybe they were allowed by right and weren't violations, but I think it's pretty clear that they were. And as far as Amanda's question about the goalpost, I've talked to both LCDC and the SIAC, the state SIAC.
What's SIAC?
CIAC. Oh, I don't know the.
Okay. Fair enough. An important body at the state.
Citizen
sounds impressive.
At the state level.
Sounds like a czar.
And they've both told me very clearly that the goalpost rule is in force. So I don't think that that's a question, and I know that planning has told me that Mr. Engstrom is also working with the city attorney trying to find a way to do whatever they were going to do with that question. So I'm still not understanding from the proposal how these things can be retroactively approved when the rules in place at the time should be the rules under which they are reviewed. Going forward, that's a different matter. But there's a number of them pending that are still outstanding, and an additional list we submitted over a year ago that they wouldn't acknowledge or even investigate. And getting back to my recent submission to you for the record, I was wondering how the recent changes would be reviewed, and that the traffic, safety, environmental impacts of the new boundaries and the high school redesign could not possibly be known now. I mean, they just approved this 3 or 4 weeks ago, so how could any analysis have been done as required by the regional framework plan? And I'm just confused about how that question is going to be answered. And finally, the last question I had was about the money, as this has been discussed. I mean, what if the bond does not pass? How are we going to? So then we'll have no type 2 and we'll have no funding. And we'll be right back where we started.
Thank you. Marianne?
Thank you. Happy to be here. My name is Marianne Schwab, Sunnyside neighborhood resident. Why am I nervous? That 3 minute clock, I got to slow down and I'm going to tell you what I need to tell you. I'm with the PPS Parent Union, one of the zoning compliance at all 11 schools, and most recently just finished working with the League of Women Voters on an education equity study. And I want to make it clear, we've done a lot of homework on this. The presentation was made formal February 8th. You were all invited to either attend or watch the replays. I am not speaking for the League today. These are Marianne's comments, and please take them as such. I'll start. We have many questions regarding this matter and any changes you might make to the current zoning code. An education that is suitable for all Portland students will never be sustained by practices from our segregated past. Segregation and educational apartheid in Portland should hold no attraction for any of you. Yet your changes to these zoning codes urge us right back in that direction. When it comes to our children, one violation of the code should be made too much for the city. The fact that the city has allowed 250 or more zoning violations to be filed and has done nothing for these children for 3 long years is criminal. The city has made itself an accessory to Portland Public Schools' segregationalist practices and has made a mockery of a speedy justice. It had number one, and I have 11 of these. It has been nearly 3 years since citizens filed over 200 valid zoning code violations that were harming our children's education and quality of life. Those violations all related to one single paragraph of the code. The current code lays out a clear process that which must occur before grade configuration changes are made in PPS. During school closures and reconfigurations over many years, PPS neglected to go through the mandatory conditional use practices required to close or rearrange our public schools. Why do you refuse to enforce your own clear zoning code when by doing so you would begin the process of ending racial and socioeconomic discrimination in Portland? Why for 3 years have citizens had this conversation with the city, the people? Please enforce your own zoning code quickly and help speed a great education for our children, city staff. We can enforce our own zoning code because it's too confusing, the people. But the code, if the code were confusing, why could we file approximately 250 or more valid zoning violations, the city staff? Well, the zoning code is not confusing to the laypersons. It is only confusing to the mayor, city council, city staff, and school districts. And number three, if the zoning code grade thresholds were complicated, how could your principal city planner, Mr. Ekstrom, write this to the director back in July of 2008? I quote, "The zoning code has a very detailed thresholds identifying the changes in the school activity that trigger conditional use review. Because no conditional use reviews were filed by PPS for the identified changes, there have been many violations of the zoning code," unquote. Number four, if your changes to the current code are for clarification, why are they so complicated? Number five, why has the city not responded to the new 40 zoning code violations we filed in May 2010 regarding violations including but not limited to illegal grade configurations, sound pollution, light pollution, and AstroSurf? How can you even be discussing this matter today with 40 outstanding violations and no response? Number six, why do you continue to propose zoning code changes which will not comport with state law regarding elementary, middle, and high schools in Oregon, OAR 581 Division 22 state standards? Number seven, if this is a democratic process and you understand that zoning code complainants are parents, students, teachers, and grandparents, why do you hold today's meeting on this crucial issue at 2 o'clock when everyone knows all Portland public schools let out between 2 and 4 and parents must pick up their children? Why hold this meeting today when
if you keep going, we'll make it for them to be here in plenty of time. You're a minute and a half over.
I beg your indulgence, Commissioner
Leonard. Well, I was just pointing out we may be open plenty of time for the parents to get here. Go ahead.
May I finish?
Go ahead.
Thank you. If you want public participation in this process, why did you bury the fact that you would allow a system of pre-K to 12 into any PPS school? It's in your chart blue pages, page 50. Number nine, if the mayor's new amendment simply is simply the nose of the camel under the tent, fully allowing the possibility of extreme grade configurations like pre-K to 12, just like the Planning Commissioner Smith's spring version in 2010. Under the mayor's scenario, once you allow one grade to come into a school from the next level under a conditional use, the district is free to add the whole level with no further land use review. How is that productive to our neighborhoods, to our children? Number 10, why has the city hung a Christmas tree of their own zoning code violations on the backs of PPS students? We have filed zoning violations that prove that students from at least 25 neighborhoods at 11 different schools are suffering current and ongoing discrimination. Why have you hung on our children zoning zone violations that have nothing to do with them or the discrimination they face? Zoning code changes to golf courses, boat ramps, cemeteries, concessions, parking, college institutions. Do you think we don't know that this blue book reads like a litany of your other zoning code violations? Should we file complaints on all the other violations that we know about when the city hasn't even responded to the recent 40 violations filed in May of 2010? Number 11, why do you continue to provide retroactive immunity for Portland public school violations which affect our children and our neighborhoods? It's for transportation. Children are at risk. Number 12, if you make these changes, what process will assure that school facilities are appropriate for the age of children attending that school? How can you assure citizens that fire exit codes and bathroom facilities are safe for small children? How can you be sure middle school and high school students will have adequate science labs and sports fields? If PPS has proven anything in the zoning process, they have demonstrated they cannot be trusted to do anything right for our children. I will ask you what I have been asking for 3 years. Make no changes to the excellent zoning code on our records today. Instead, help us speed up to a better, greater education for our children. Thank you.
You received an extra 4 minutes for a total of 7.
With my work, thank you for your patience. I'm hoping you listen to the 7 minutes actively.
Absolutely.
And we'll do what you can to answer the questions, both for Mark and the rest of us. There's lots of written testimony that's been given to you in the last 3-4 months, and we have heard nothing.
And have you submitted what you just said into the record in a written form?
I will when I get home.
That'd be great. Thank you very much.
Does council have any questions of staff?
Of staff.
Okay. Thank you all for being here.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Who would you like, Commissioner Saltzman?
Deborah? So I guess under the mayor's proposal, let's see. Well, I'm not sure I understood when it said allow. If you allow one grade to change, that applies to all grades. I can't find exactly where that is, but I just heard Marianne.
Yeah, no, I caught that too. Let me see. And can you clarify that? Okay, thank you. Sorry.
Hello, Sandra Wood with Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. I think Ms. Schwab's point was that if under the mayor's proposal, if a grade is, if a school contains any grades between K through 8 and a 9th grade was added, a conditional use would be required to add the 9th grade. But then once they have the 9th grade, they could add 10th, 11th, and 12th grade without an additional conditional use. The same goes for the Planning Commission's proposal, too. It's K through 5, 6 through 8, then 9 through 12. Mm-hmm. Once you have grades in any of those segments, you can add other grades in those segments and those grade levels without an additional conditional use, which was, I think, what her point was.
Okay, thanks.
But the Planning Commission was recommending
three grade levels versus the mayor's proposal recommending 2 grade levels.
And type 3 reviews, though.
Depending on which way you go, up or down, it could be a type 2 or type 3. Okay. So
in the mayor,
under both proposals, Planning Commission and mayor's.
So in the mayor's proposal, adding higher grades would be a type 3. Adding lower grades, if you had a high school, adding lower grades, it would be a type 2, which is consistent with how the zoning code is mainly written, currently structured.
And I guess just a related issue. Well, I guess you probably should know the answer to this. Governor Kitzhaber has envisioning the notion of pre through K or pre through 8 schools possibly being full service or full service preschool facilities. Do our amendments foreclose or encourage those types of that type of thinking?
It's not included in these amendments, and the zoning code regulates preschools as a different use category than schools, and colleges are separate also.
Right.
So we didn't look at it during this during these proposed amendments, and preschools they're more permissive in general.
More permissive
because they're allowed. Because they're allowed in a variety of zones.
But I'm wondering if we go with the new regime, whichever it is. We're talking about K through 5.
Mm-hmm. If you were to add it would not trigger under this proposal. That doesn't suddenly trigger a new conditional use. If you had a K through 5 and you were to add a pre-K to that school,
it's a new use category. So I'd need to look at the zoning code to double check that. Do you know if preschool as a We can look it up for you
see
what use which zones are allowed.
This is our first reading, right? So our first recent new reading.
Right.
Right.
Sorry, I'm late. I was in the front row of a State of the City address,
by the mayor of Vancouver, so.
A little hard to slip out.
It was hard to slip out. I apologize. So I've been briefed a little bit. We're in council discussion, and there's a proposed amendment on the table, which you're discussing right now. Is that correct? And other issues?
Yes.
Okay. More discussion?
Well, I think it was the...
The daycare question.
Yeah, I think you answered that. I guess I was kind of concerned about the moving goalpost. I think as Commissioner Fritz referred to it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not familiar with land use that much, but I do understand the concept of moving the goalpost. And so is there maybe Catherine needs to answer this, but are we allowed to do that or not with respect to all these pending violation cases? By changing our rules, are we able to eliminate allegations?
May I answer the question about the daycare? So daycare is a different use category, and they're allowed by right on any school site.
Okay, great.
So
great.
If you had a high school and you needed to add a daycare, you could do that. If you had a K through 8 and you needed to add a daycare, you could do that by right.
Great, thanks.
And that's
thanks
currently in the zoning code.
Thank you.
So I guess tell us about the moving goalpost.
Well, the new no moving the goalpost rule is specific to quasi-judicial land use applications for zone changes, permits, land divisions. Mm-hmm. And what it provides is that once that you can't change the standards that apply to an application while it's under review, that in no way precludes the council from amending its zoning regulations over time such that maybe things that were disallowed before are allowed now or things that were allowed before are disallowed now. So the no changing the goalpost rule applies in a quasi-judicial setting. It doesn't take away the council's legislative powers to change zoning regulations over time.
And to be clear, specifically in this instance, there are some in the community that believe there were zoning violations, but that doesn't necessarily mean there were zoning violations. As I understood the answer from Deborah, that this was a gray area, that while some may have felt there were some improper things occurring with respect to mixing of grades, that the Planning Commission, BDS, didn't see the issue that starkly. And that what we're attempting to do is take a gray area and clear it up.
That's my understanding.
So right.
They would be re-reviewed in the context of the new amendments to see, because there were some that may still be evaluated as violations, and that those would have to be looked at with the new amendments in place.
Right, but just to close the loop on the closing, on the moving and the goals, that is just not a principle that's applicable to this situation, as I understand it.
Well, I guess I disagree with the characterization that it didn't, it was not in violation before. I think we are then saying we want to change the rules to make it not in violation, but I don't think there's necessary.
But there were different interpretations based on the same words in the code, how it was interpreted, whether it was a violation or not, was not a clear answer.
Okay.
Even among staff in looking at the same words. So that's where we found there was some ambiguity in the code. And if it's interpreted in different ways, that was a trigger to us that we need to rethink how the code is read, because it needs to be as clear and objective as possible. And if different people are interpreting the same words differently, that indicated to us we needed to clarify the code.
And to me, the important value here is we all care about kids' safety. We all care about kids' education. The question is, when the school district, for reasons of educational need or financial need, wants to change the grade level, what is the city's responsibility in making sure that the children can get to that school safely?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that the mayor's proposal, with all due respect, does that because of the amount of money. If we've got tens of millions of dollars worth in transportation needs in sidewalks. I think of Markham Elementary School, which I think 15 years ago at least was $1 million to put the sidewalks in there, and that was 15, 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. Thinking of Jackson Middle School, that would be $5 million right there to do the sidewalks on 35th and Huber. So, and if we're thinking of smaller children going to middle schools and perhaps not being able to get bus service if they're not within a certain distance,
older children walking to what was previously a grade school because they're not eligible to get bus service or there isn't any bus service. To me, then our responsibility is as the city, as the school district decides that they'd like to do that particular school, to then have a conditional use process so that it can come to council and we can decide to prioritize our that year's capital improvement budget for that particular project. That's why I support the Type 3. It's very similar to what we did this morning with the ICE facility, that if you have a conditional use process, as Commissioner Leonard very helpfully pointed out this morning, the answer is probably going to be yes. It's a discretionary review, but it's not really a discretionary review on yes or no. It's how. It's what are the safety factors and how do you take care of them. That's what the Type 3 conditional use gets to us, and that's why I support the Planning Commission's recommendation, because I believe that then gets it to council, which is the proper place for us to then prioritize our scarce dollars. I appreciate, you know, it would be, I agree, we want $5 million in the bond measure should it pass, but that is not going to be enough to do the capital improvements on all of the grade schools and middle schools citywide. It just isn't.
But, I mean, the other issue that needs to be, I think, addressed also is we can't allow our zoning code to be used as a tool by those who oppose what the school district's trying to do to stretch the dollars, limited dollars they have to educate as many kids as they can, because that's really the elephant in the room here that we're not talking about is some have, using the code, attempted to achieve an end by utilizing our zoning code and to make us somehow be the enforcer to achieve some other goal. That's not lost on me, and I don't want to pretend like it's not an issue here, because that it is. So what's very, and I think the points that Commissioner Fritz is making are good, but what's also important to me is that we not just say we work closely with the school district, but we in fact work closely with the school district as we try to achieve similar goals. And it's very important to me when I have a member of the school board here who is elected, and by the way, works for nothing. Why you agree to do that is another conversation that I would enjoy hearing your answer to, for the grief you put up with, including this today. But it's very significant to me when the school board is sitting here saying, we do not support the Planning Commission's proposal, but we do support the mayor's proposal. That feels to me like we are trying to achieve some balance and do what I think the community expects us to do, work closely with the school district to achieve their goals of educating children in as safe manner as possible, and we do it in a cooperative fashion.
And there, if I could, I mean, we have made a priority of safe routes to schools. And to address the Planning Commission's concerns, we have this commitment for the master plan and money, which we can use to leverage other money. It's important that we chip away at this, more than chip away at this, that we prioritize it, and we have as a city council and as transportation commissioner. But I have to agree with, and at the same time, we're giving $160 million to the county for the Selwood Bridge that could have gone into this. I mean, we as council have made a variety of, as we are required to do, a variety of balancing decisions. And if we're going to prioritize the success of our schools, I think we need to, as Commissioner Leonard said, be a partner with them in both allowing them to move forward with the facility decisions that they need to make, which are not popular, and at the same time make sure that they're a good partner with us and on the transportation side, which is the master plan and the financial contribution should the measure pass. But, you know, we could have said no to, for example, the Selwood Bridge. It's all about where you want to put your pivot point and what discussion we're talking about on a particular day. And we could have put sidewalks around every school with $160 million over the next 20 years. So I caution us as a community from cherry picking. When folks came to me that had been behind expressing these kinds of concerns, they had a variety of concerns, as Commissioner Leonard talked about. a variety of concerns, and transportation was on some lists, but not all lists, and it wasn't at the top of all lists either. So we have to vote on the amendment. Call the vote on the amendment, please.
And these are the mayor's amendments.
They've been
February 9th memo. Okay.
Thank you.
Fritz.
So we're voting on the entire package of amendments, and I have to vote no because the amount of money that's being proposed is not enough to prioritize even the most urgent needs in sidewalks around schools. And there aren't going to be a lots of pots of federal money or other money coming in to help with those sidewalks. Therefore, if we've just got $5 million, which I certainly appreciate it coming from the hundreds of millions being proposed in the school bond measure, we need to have a process which the city council can say, yes, of course, school district, you can do what you need to do academically and putting children in different facilities. What we are responsible for as a city council is providing safe routes to those schools and not simply saying, well, it's in the plan and we'll get to it when we have the funding. We have to be honest. So we don't have enough money. And so therefore, we have to have a mechanism, which I believe is the type 3 conditional use, which the Planning Commission recommends and I support. And that's the only way we're going to be able to prioritize and give the neighborhoods what they need in being able to participate in discussing what particular safety improvements are needed if grade level changes are proposed are required by the school district. No.
Saltzman.
I will support these amendments. Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Adams.
I appreciate Commissioner Fritz's concern. I'm not convinced that through the Type 3 process that it will result in any more sidewalks or any more investment than what we have in front of us. So I think obviously well-intended and well-stated. I think actually this will have provide more money for more sidewalks at more schools than a Type 3 process. Aye. All right. Where are we now?
So you have adopted your proposed code amendments, the council has. I think the next item before you would be to substitute the ordinance that would adopt your code amendments for the ordinance that's before the council.
Hear motion.
We'll move.
Moved and seconded to do what Catherine just said. So this is a motion to substitute, as described by the city attorney. Sue, would you please call the vote?
Fritz.
No.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. Motion passes. Now what do we do?
I think you can move the substitute ordinance to second reading.
So the substitute ordinance moves to a second reading. Do we have to have a date or just next week?
Let's announce a date and time.
We don't do these legislative actions very often, do we?
It'll be March 2nd at 9:30, regular agenda.
March 2nd at 9:30, next Wednesday. Yeah. All right. We stand in recess.
Actually, I understand there's an announcement to be made concerning what was scheduled for tomorrow afternoon.
Yes.
You're good.
Talking about spoon feeding me, huh? Thank goodness you're here. The conversations with among the city council and the discussions with the FBI and Oregon U.S. Attorney's Office, Department of Justice, have been fruitful and constructive, but as the commissioner in charge of police, I need more time. So tomorrow's 2 p.m., time certain hearing on protocols for cooperating with the FBI and others on terrorist investigations will not be occurring. And my goal is to reschedule it. Do we have the date?
We do.
And we schedule it so everyone's here on March 10th at 2 p.m. Takes a whole village some days. Unless it's there any objections, it is so done. We're adjourned. Thank you.